Memphis, and welcome to Storyboard 30. This is the show taken right out of the pages of Storyboard Memphis, the journal that brings you Memphis stories, ideas, connections, and community in one place. And I am Mark Fleischer, publisher of Storyboard Memphis, and your host for the next 30 or so minutes of Storyboard 30. My guest today, Jane Ellen White. Jane is currently the music specialist for the Memphis Music Hub, which is a site on the Memphis tourism site. Jane is a Memphian by choice. She's been here for about 13 years. Jane has also worked for Stax Music Academy, and she also worked for 10 years at the one and only Sun Studios. Jane Ellen White, welcome to Storyboard 30.
Thank you, Mark. I'm happy to be here.
Talking before the show here, we were talking about a variety of things, but one of the things we were talking about, of course, is two things, the Memphis Music Hub, which we'll talk about at length, and also really how Memphis musicians are faring right now through this pandemic, and really some of the struggles they're facing with not being able to perform live in our music venues. So I want to talk about, first of all, a little bit about the Music Hub, of course, but also how Memphis musicians are faring, some of the things you all have done, like the live event, the live event you all put together, and then also the DJ, the virtual DJ series that you all coordinated. So I want to talk about those things. But why don't we start by talking about your role with Memphis Tourism? And then also the Music Hub. So why don't we start there?
Sure. So I am the music specialist at Memphis Tourism, which is our city's official destination marketing organization. And I have been there for just about a year now. Of course, Memphis Tourism has always heavily integrated music into their branding and marketing strategies. But it was obvious that we, as an organization, needed to really have one person that just woke up every day and lived and breathed how to, pay attention to our current music scene and best honor all of the amazing music that happens here in our city every day within our marketing strategies. And so that is how my position came available. And when I heard it was, happening, I definitely thought that I was the best person for the job with my experience in music tourism here in Memphis previous. Of course, I worked at Sun Studio for 10 years and Stax as well. So it's a passion of mine. I absolutely love it. And so far, Music Hub has been extremely successful in really kind of laying into our current music scene. And that's something that hasn't happened quite the way it's happening now.
Yeah. Before we get into that and how things are going right now, let's talk about the Music Hub and what was the purpose of the hub? What's its mission? How did it come about?
Sure. Yeah. So its mission right now, of course, it's going to take a little bit of a turn, but originally we really wanted to make sure that the whole world knew Memphis as a current music city, as a live music city as well, which, you and I, obviously, Mark, know that that is the case, that we've never stopped being a current music city, but because we have so much rich legacy here in the city, when people think of who we are as a destination, oftentimes they think of course, Elvis and Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins and Al Green and, Royal Studios and Stax and all of this music that literally changed pop culture and music all over the Western world. It's hard to compete with that. And so when it was really time to say, you know what, this is great, this is amazing, but we've kind of forgotten that Memphis has never stopped being this really energetic music city. And we have to really try hard to intentionally make people know who we are. And so that's how it came about. And I could talk forever about how many amazing musicians we have here currently. So.
Yeah, and that's so important because, here we are, obviously, we, you know, whether we say compete or partner, whatever we want to say with Nashville, right? Nashville is so much thought of as, you know, a spot where current country music is recorded. And folks outside of the music world don't always realize that we still have a vibrant current music scene here, right? Not just live music, but also being recorded.
Yeah, yeah. So we have amazing recording studios. That was part of something that Music Hub accomplished, was to kind of put down all of the recording studios that we have, from the, you know, back house recording studio that's doing really indie punk rock garage stuff that people are still listening to all over the world, to more, you know, prestigious recording studios like David Porter's studio or Memphis Magnetic Recording. Scott McEwen is doing amazing work there. So we are recording Studio City. That's never changed. And I think that because of the high caliber of musicians that we do have here, it's easy to take it for granted that we are a recording studio city. So much so that I think we've kind of forgotten to tell other people that we are a recording studio city. So
yeah, and part of the goal of not just tourism, but the hub is to continue to tell the music story here in Memphis.
Sure. Continue to tell that story. Also provide resources to people who may be coming to Memphis. And, you know, in a space where things are changing really quickly, originally the hub was, you know, to draw attention to the current scene, but then also let people know, you know, hey, I'm in a band and I really want to see, you know, what recording studios I could record at while I'm in town, which is something that people want to do because Memphis is such a legacy, you know, music city. So the idea of recording a record in Memphis, no matter if you are one person with a guitar and kind of like a bucket list dream, or if you're a, you know, amazing slicked out seven-piece band with a string section, we have all of the infrastructure here in town for that to happen. And putting that on Music Hub for people who might be interested in that was something that I really thought was important. It also lists all the capabilities of each studio. So, you know, what their specialties are and what they may or may not be able to record.
Now, talking about the pandemic, when the shutdown occurred, when we started to see that, oh gosh, we're going to be shutting down for a while, back in really what, the first couple of weeks of March, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things that you all did at Tourism and with the Music Hub is you all established or set up it was called Get Live Virtual Music Festival. Mm-hmm. And it went on for a whole weekend back in March 26, 27, 28.
Right.
So how did, because that came together, that had to have come together fairly quickly. You know, side note, this is a tribute to everyone in Memphis and everyone really across the country, how quickly everyone responded to the fact, oh, we're going to be shut down. What do? Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to be shut down indoors at our homes. What do we do? How do we continue our mission, whether it be Memphis music, whether it be nonprofits, even, you know, you can go on and on, but how do we continue to produce? How do we continue to be out there? Take us back, if you would, to the beginning, middle of March there. And how did this idea germinate? And then how did you pull it off?
Everybody remembers that week where the NBA shut down, and it was very evident that we were entering into a brand new normal. And some of the immediate effects of things being shut down, it was really just live events, you know, live sports, live music, any sort of show, any sort of large gathering, everything was just being canceled. Which was shocking, I know, to everyone, but to the people who make a living playing music, it was shocking in a way that's really different than it was to you and I, Mark, because, you know, we still were trying to figure out how to pivot in our jobs. And they were figuring out how to pay rent in a way that wasn't available to them anymore. You know, basically music is the way that they had been paying, you know, for their lifestyles. and now it wasn't something that they could do anymore. That does something not only to your paycheck, but also to your sense of identity. You know, if you wake up every day and you say, I'm a musician, I play live music every day, and then someone says, actually, that actually doesn't exist anymore. That's not even a thing. It was the sense of panic, basically, that I felt throughout so many of my friends who play music here in town. And honestly, friends that I have that are playing music all over the world, you know, on tour. I knew people from Memphis and not from Memphis that were stranded in the UK. They couldn't get home, you know, and it was this sense of panic and, oh my God, what are we going to do now? And in the same way that they were wondering what their sense of identity was and really kind of struggling with that grief, Memphis was also as a whole struggling with, okay, if we're not a place where you go out every night and see live amazing music, then what are we exactly going to do to rally around, you know, these people who have made Memphis so special and contributed so much to our cultural identity? And so I guess we shut down, I think, maybe the 14th or 15th of March. And it was just, you know, very quick thinking. It was, we could have a live show because people were starting to do that, you know, or we could create a space for people to feel like they're in community, which is what the festival aspect was. And that, I think, was the most fun and intriguing part of Get Live Virtual Fest, because you could go into our Facebook event page and you knew what the schedule was. And if you wanted to skip the 8:30 band but then come back for the 9 o'clock band, just like you would in a festival, you could do that. So you felt like you were still interacting in a way, in a festival sense. But yeah, it was basically like a 4-day turnaround, you know, which is incredible to think about it now. I was working harder than I, you know, probably have ever worked in that space. It was like, oh, let's do this. And we have to do it now because pretty soon everyone is going to be doing lives and this isn't going to be something that's going to cause a lot of hoopla. So we really need to rally around our community. And so I came up with the concept. The guy who did the art, who's amazing, Tunki, lives across the street from me. So I literally walked down the steps and was like, hey, I have a job for you. And he's really a special person, Quantavious Worship. And he really got my concept of, you know, I want Memphis watching this on their laptops. I want everybody at home, staying at home, being safe, and also contributing to our music scene. And then I reached out to Elizabeth Kaywin at Music Export Memphis. And yeah, she was obviously in the same boat as we were. You know, it was kind of like, we got to do something and we got to do something now. I called her and just said, hey, I want a way for people who are engaging with this festival to be able to donate to our overall music scene. If I make that a call to action, will you have a relief fund ready in 3 days? That was the actual call.
3 days.
Yeah. And it was that fast. It was the week before we had shut down, and it was like that Friday I came up with the concept, and the next weekend is when the festival started. Yeah. And meanwhile, we're on Facebook calls with Facebook, you know, trying to figure out what the best way is to get this out there. So it was really fast, and she worked with her team and with, you know, other investors here in town, cultural arts investors here in town, to try to figure out the best way to get that grant funding available as quickly as possible. And, you know, lo and behold, the Thursday of the festival, it was up live that day. So it all happened really quickly. We were lucky enough to raise $30,000 for that fund just during that weekend for Get Live Virtual Fest in a 3-day period. And obviously some of that was private donors and some of it was large donor, but it was definitely quite an accomplishment. And we had 85,000 views within 1 week.
Wow.
So it was a super impression for sure. I think that everybody saw Memphis was there for their music community and saw Memphis music.
Yeah. I was just refreshing my memory on the whole thing, and you know, you partner with Music Export Memphis. You mentioned Elizabeth Kwan, mm-hmm. And the donations that went through that relief fund. What a success story, first of all. And secondly, once again, I feel like when I think back, because things were happening so fast at that point, that you all came together so quickly. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that's the first live event, music-wise, that I can recall seeing.
Yeah.
I mean, you all jumped on it very quickly and organized it in, you know, in amazing time.
Yeah, it was my baby. It was, you know, I saw the need and I knew we have very small period of time to make an impact here.
Right.
And, you know, other gigantic corporations were going through the same thing. You know, I think NBC did something with John Legend or something. And they were all, I knew, like going to debut probably that same weekend, and then it would be a saturated market, which it is. It's still a great platform, a growing platform, evolving every day for musicians here in Memphis, all social media platforms, and then also, you know, ticketed apps and sites where you can, you know, actually throw a concert and then people can pay is another thing that musicians are going to now, which is great. But there will be a different way. There will be a way for Memphis music to be seen in a live landscape at some point that seems safe and palatable to a larger amount of people than we would think now, but also much less than it once was, I think.
Yeah. Do you think this changes live music to any degree? I mean, I know this is going to be a very slow reopening, and you're definitely in touch with the reopening. We could talk about that in a moment. But do you think that this could possibly change how we look at live music events? Maybe it's a combination of virtual with actual live. I mean,
yeah.
See this changing the culture and the landscape?
You know, this is something that Lana Deering once mentioned to me. I'm going to just say yes, I think so. I think that the bounds of which we need to look to are limitless. You know, if we could like hologram performance people, you know, that would be amazing. I know that's something that sounds crazy and next space age level, but I think that overall, absolutely, this is going to be a game changer for everyone. And if we are in a recession as an economy, then the music industry is in a depression. If we are using our skills as a music community to kind of figure out how we can be available to consumers, then maybe we don't even look at live music at this moment. Maybe it's not even necessarily a virtual thing. You know, maybe we are using all of our creative power to activate recording studios here in town and really push a new boom in recorded music industry. You know, there's a lot of different things that we could do, but I definitely think it's gonna change the way people watch live music. You know, you're looking at restaurants and bars, and right now, bigger cities are implementing outdoor dining and bar experiences where they're also encased into glass or plastic, and they have limited access to contact with human beings. And that's just literally the opposite of what we know to be a live music experience. If you look back at Memphis in May, at Mempho, at you know, even Beale Street and all these amazing legendary live music experiences, the Levitt Shell, what we think of is a packed house, even if it's outdoors. And we look at that in this beautiful way. You know, we're all there together and we can touch each other and we can feel the energy from the music. And it's so inspiring. And that's what we're here for. And that's what people come to Memphis for. And we have to figure out a way to recreate all of that energy in a way that makes people feel safe. I don't know what that looks like. You know, maybe it looks like we're all just hanging out in plexiglass shields. I definitely know that people are thinking about it for sure.
Yeah. You know, me being really a huge music fan, especially rock and roll music, I will tell you that, you all probably thought about this, but I will tell you that the virtual in-studio sessions that I have seen online, where, you know, the musicians have been in separate places, but they're in their home studios, and recreating even just a classic piece of music in their studio, to me has been, it's like a peek into their world. It's like peeking into the studio, you mm-hmm. know. Mm-hmm. I have found that to be very, I mean, not just entertaining, but just really engaging. Like me being my age, you know, I don't necessarily like the concert scene as much anymore. I don't need the adrenaline fueled mm-hmm. type event. I like the intimate events. And sure. So I have really come to enjoy these studio type sessions, you know, so the Get Live, you know, the other ones that we've seen, like the Stones,
right?
You yeah. know, the Doobie Brothers. Mm-hmm. I've seen. I can't think of the others off the top of my head.
I'll tell you what my favorite has been, besides, of course, Get Live Virtual Music Fest, which was so Memphis and so heartfelt. Yeah. Everybody, shout out to I Love Memphis, because everybody held up an I Love Memphis sign, and it was just what our community needed, for yeah. sure. But for me, besides that, the best moment. And to your point, it's exactly the same reason why. It was Erykah Badu and Jill Scott doing Instagram Battle, and they weren't performing. They were just, you know, playing each other's songs. But, you know, me as a fan of both of those women, I would never be able to be in an intimate space with either of them and hear one of them talk about getting a text from their mother. And, you know, Michelle Obama's in the room too. So me as a fan, I suddenly feel like I'm hanging out in a room with Michelle Obama watching Jill Scott and Erykah Badu. That's not something that I would ever dream of before this. And so it is letting the consumer, the fan, the music lover in a way that never has been before. And we're all kind of grieving and raw and, you know, more available, I think, to each other than we have been before. So yeah, that's a great point. I think that, you know, maybe introducing more of a listening, smaller, intimate setting concert series would be really great. You know, some of these studios, I feel like once it becomes more of a norm to be in groups of people, you know, could do a series where it's the same band every Friday night. And if you want a ticket, there's only 15. And then the want becomes, I got to get a ticket to see that, because not everybody's going to be able to get it. And so, you know, if I could get there, it's a different experience than, you know, watching it from my house. And it's right. It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So talking about how the world in live music is changing, you were involved in this slow reopening. So you kind of have your finger on the pulse of the slow reopening. Mm-hmm. What is that looking like right now?
For our music attractions, which have meant so much to us as a destination marketing organization, and to the people who come here, you know, all over the world. I was one of those people. Because of my love of our music legacy, and wanting to go to Sun and wanting to go to Stax. So yeah, it's a weird thing, you know, when I'm used to going downtown and seeing people from Australia, you know, and the UK, and all over the world celebrating our music legacy, and then that just has stopped, and then these amazing attractions and legacy landmarks having to figure out what the best way is to reopen. It's pretty tricky stuff. You know, a place like Sun Studio has, you know, just three rooms. It's downstairs, you know, in the gift shop, and then upstairs in a gallery, and then the actual studio, which whoever's listening, if you have never been to Sun Studio, it is a tiny 1950s recording studio that's just really fit enough for a setup for, you know, a three-piece, four-piece band, some extra equipment, and maybe 30 people comfortable, and that's it, you know, and that's standing. 30 people comfortable is standing. And so, you know, their phase two reopening strategies here in town for our music attractions have to look like 50%. And, you know, if comfortable was 30 standing before, I don't know what that number looks like, but it's small. But the thing is that it's really, it is in all of our best interests to make sure that people who do come to the city feel comfortable doing so, and that we're treating this situation very responsibly, you know, that we are valuing lives and valuing everybody's comfort level. You know, you or I, I'm sure, don't want to go to a museum that's starting packed in with people. And we want to know that whoever's in charge has our best interests in mind. So I think that's happening here. I think, you know, everyone that I've talked to, with reopening strategies as far as the music attraction angle goes, everyone has been really reassuring that they're doing all of the right things.
Yeah. You know, I keep thinking about how when it comes to tourism in general, but also, you know, our live music legacy more specifically, so much of our revenue relies on international travel, right?
Sure.
You know, we talk about Sun Studios, for example, at least half of the tourists that are from other countries. When you go on a tour, you hear all kinds of accents and different languages when you're on a tour there. And that is going to be arguably the slowest part of the travel industry that's going to turn around, right? Or come back around.
Right.
So I wonder, and this is probably a conversation for later, you know, for you and I maybe, I can't help but feel like we need to encourage folks who can travel by car in the Mid-South, come take a tour.
Yeah. So we at Memphis Tourism have an amazing research department, and everything that we do, 100%. Is on the facts from the research that we gather. And we know for a fact that the first visitor to Memphis is going to be within our drive markets here, which is 300 to 500 miles from where we are. And we know that they're going to be a younger demographic and road tripping. And so the call, you know, really is, let's figure out, you know, the best way to get a younger audience in our car on the way to Memphis to experience all of our amazing attractions, not only the music space, which is, you know, awesome, and that's what we're known for, but all of our outdoor attractions as well, and the zoo, and you know, people from St. Louis and Little Rock and Birmingham, they're going to be jumping in their cars first. And we need to make sure that everyone knows we are a city that is safe and fun and has a lot to offer.
You know, safe is important. You know, we have been fortunate enough to not have the kinds of numbers in terms of cases and fatalities that, you know, other cities have had. Mm-hmm. We've got warmer weather coming. The humidity is going to start to rise again soon, which we've been told that the virus does not do well traveling in hot, you know, heat and humidity, which is great for us. So yeah, I mean, the car, I mean, I know personally, I'm dying to get in the car and go to, you know, to the Delta or to go anywhere. Yeah. It seems like, and just get the heck out of the house, you know, and go somewhere and see something, you know?
Yeah. And so that's going to be who's coming here is these, you know, people who are having, you know, Zoom meetings in, you know, Birmingham for 70 hours a week. And they really, you know, they know that we're here, that Memphis is an awesome city, and we're doing everything that we can at Memphis Tourism to make sure that everyone knows, like, you know, put your family in a car and come see all of the things that we have to do here in town, and how responsibly we are allowing that to happen here in the city. It's really going to be incredible. I think that, you know, slowly but surely, Memphis will start to show our community and, of course, the region as well that we are doing it very well. And it's going to be a really fun summer of travel, I think, for a lot of people, for that small drive market.
Yeah. So talking about you for a few minutes.
Sure.
You mentioned, you know, before we started recording, you're a military brat. So, you know, you moved around quite a bit, you know, growing up, which means you're a Memphian by choice,
yeah.
Right? Yes. And you've been here for 13 years now, we mentioned. So 10 years at Sun, which I want to talk about that in a few minutes. 2 years at Stax. And now a year at Memphis Tourism. What is it about Memphis? And I'm sure that the answer is pretty obvious, but what was it when you did, you know, when you decided that's where I'm going to go, that's what I want to do? Walk us through, you know, that whole thought process of making the trip here and then how you made the trip here.
Sure. So I am a huge music fan. So there's that.
Yeah.
I grew up a military brat, like you said, and music was always the center of my life, whether it be, you know, every genre of music, honestly, was just something that was always celebrated. And when I got to college in Philadelphia, you know, every boyfriend I'd ever had was in a band at that point. And I was just kind of really into the music scene, played music. And everywhere I went, I wrote for a music magazine in college. And when I moved from Philly in college to Phoenix, Arizona, I took a road trip from Philly to Phoenix through, you know, of course, Appalachia and Nashville, which I had lived in twice prior. And then, of course, Memphis, because I wanted to visit Sun and Stax. And I went through the Delta and went to see the place where Robert Johnson recorded in Clarksdale. And kind of went down through New Orleans and made my way to Phoenix. And I really absolutely enjoyed my time here in Memphis when I was on that road trip. And I always kind of just thought, you know, musically, that's obviously the route. Of course, it's been written about and talked about and in every documentary you could think of. But it just kind of felt like, you know, I want to be here. I was really drawn to it. And so when it was time for me to move, I obviously loved Tennessee and I had lived here twice prior, like I said. I just felt like Memphis was the place to do it. I really thought that what I would do here is work at Sun Studio. And so I moved without a car. I actually booked a little Greyhound trip from where my parents live in the mountains and decided that I was going to be on my way to Memphis, Tennessee on a Greyhound. And I actually called Sun Studio on my pink flip phone on the Greyhound bus and asked if they were hiring. And I thought, you know, I'm sure that they're not. I'm sure that they'll say that they aren't. But I'm just going to call and see. I'm just going to, you know, put my toes in the water there. And, of course, whoever answered the phone said what everybody says. No, we're not hiring right now, but you're welcome to come in and fill out an application. And me, you know, having all this experience in music and being a music writer and a promoter in Phoenix, which I was, and, you know, playing music myself, I was kind of being stubborn. I was like, you know, I don't feel like I want to just go in and, like, fill out an application and see what happens. I kind of want this to be more of a intentional thing. And so I got a job doing, you know, serving stuff. And a couple of months into my time here, I met someone who was a really cool guy. And he was like, hey, you should meet my girlfriend. You have so much in common. And she and I talked for a little bit at the Buccaneer. And she said, you know what you would really be good at? We had been talking about music and all my experience. And I said, what? She said, you'd be the best tour guide at Sun Studio. And I said, Oh my God, I think so too. Do you know anyone there? And she said, I'm the manager. And I was like, yes.
Oh, so, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so that was, I think, maybe March of 2007. And I was a child, I was a baby. And I went in and got the application and, you know, quit both my other jobs and got hired and went on to become the PR director. Did a lot of media there and also did all of our international and domestic group sales.
What an awesome story. Now, you were there for 10 years.
Yes.
I'm going to say two words and you tell me this. I'd like to hear this story.
Okay.
Ozzy Osbourne.
Uh-huh. That was definitely my top three moments of working at Sun. Ozzy Osbourne is a legend, and he was way cooler than, you know, you might think, honestly. He was really gracious, and he and his son were there to film a television show. That they used me, you know, as a liaison for, and we had segments together, and you know, it was proper TV. I think his daughter called in the middle of a shoot and his ringer was on, and you know, he was just kind of oblivious to work. You know, he was really actually in the moment, which was great. He was just actually visiting Sun and having a good time, and you could tell that even though he was invested in being on this television show, that he was very impressed with being in a place like Sun Studio. In most musicians, in English musicians especially, revere our history here in music more than, honestly, some musicians who are born and bred here, in some cases at least.
Yeah.
But he was great. He was a riot, you know. I wore my Blue State shoes and it was great.
That no one I've talked to has ever heard of this show that he did with his son, where they travel to all these destinations around the world, right? And I remember looking at the show lineup and going, oh, he's coming to Memphis, you know? And that was such a fun show to watch. And of course, I had, you know, at that time had been here maybe not even a year. You know, so I couldn't wait to see that show. And I distinctly remember you being in the, behind him, behind the soundboard in the booth, watching him. Cause he was just sitting, he was just talking about the setting, the studio. And I don't remember what he was saying, but it was just a really endearing and fun segment to see.
You know what you're talking about, Mark, is in that series, we sat in the control room and I stood behind him and we watched on YouTube them doing Carl Perkins' song live. And
okay.
That was the tie-in, was, you know, Black Sabbath being such a big fan of American music and specifically Carl Perkins, who, of course, recorded at Sun. And so we were watching... I was watching with Ozzy Osbourne, him watch himself perform a Carl Perkins song. And every once in a while, Ozzy would stop and pause it and then tell me about what he remembered about that performance. And also how important Carl Perkins was to their influence. And I mean, that was an unforgettable experience that not very many people have. And I feel very blessed to have had that moment with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Listeners and fans of Ozzy Osbourne would never know that he had influences from Carl Perkins. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's strange because we think of as music fans, current music fans, I feel like, you know, we forget how much everything is just blues. You know, rock and roll is literally blues, and specifically Black Sabbath is, you know, blues music. That's what it is. And so, yeah, it's obviously rock and roll, but packaged a different way. You know, it's blues. And Yeah, we've had so much influence here in town. We don't think about it in that way, but we are global music influencers. Still, currently.
Exactly.
808 here. That's like the biggest hip hop beat.
Right. Yes. So that is one of your top three experiences at Sun. I can't even imagine the other two.
Honestly, this is going to be telling a lot about me. My number one experience at Sun was hanging out with Al Roker.
Oh, cool.
I am a big Al Roker fan. And he came, you know, we did so much major media there. I think that he was there for a Father's Day surprise. And, you know, the thing was the dad really wanted to record at Sun and they were surprising him. And I think maybe even his son was a St. Jude patient, but don't quote me on that. It all kind of gets muddled together at this point. But either way, Al Roker and I had lunch together and, you know, had some good conversations about American music and about barbecue and all the things that we're known for here in town. And I got him a pimento cheese sandwich from Trolley Stop Market. And it was an unforgettable lunch with Al Roker. But I have so many. I mean, music-wise, it just is like never ending for sure. Like, I just can't. I mean, there's so many of them. I just can't even pick them out, to be honest. So many musicians came through. And you start to, you know, as a PR director, you don't want to, you're doing your job and you're not trying to necessarily fan out, but there are some people that you have to, you know, show a little bit of emotion for. I will say this isn't in my favorite moments, but a lot of what I remember about Sun was more about the fans and the visitors and the people who waited their whole lives to come and experience the, you know, place where all of these amazing, iconic American musicians recorded and really understand it, you know. You would hear so many stories from women who are Elvis fans and, you know, what it really meant to them. There was a man who came in from India and he barely spoke English, but he told me that basically he was, you know, a teenager when Elvis's music came out in a very large city in India. And he made, you know, the smallest amount of money you could possibly think per week working at some restaurant. And he used every single cent that he made to put in the jukebox to listen to Elvis records on Friday night. That's why he did his extra work, is so that he could go and study this American music. The reach that we've had here is incredible, and working there and hearing all those stories every day, not only just at Sun, but at Stax as well, pretty incredible stuff, pretty powerful.
Yeah. So I was going to say, you went from Sun, you were a PR director at Sun for 10 years, and then you went over to Stax for a couple years.
Yeah.
So it feels like, you know, getting the sense of your journey through Memphis, it feels like you're living out a dream in a sense. And one of the stepping stones being Stax. So talk about your experience at Stax for a second.
I will stop you and say that living out a dream is definitely kind of not doing it justice. I feel like I've been given a gift to be able to experience who we are as a music city, at least in our legacy, in those actual places of study. You know, I got to be there and really study music and Memphis music. And that was the biggest gift I could possibly have. I feel very lucky for that. And Stax means so much to me. That place is beautiful. And the organization has done so much for Soulsville I really absolutely enjoyed my time there, and I miss it in a way that is different than any other place I've worked, for sure.
And in your role at Memphis Tourism, you know, you continue to work with Sun and continue to work at Stax, and all the individuals at both studios.
Stax has really great programming, and I think that's the thing that sets it apart, in my mind, at least as a consumer, is Stax is, you know, a place that's known for, of course, you go to the museum and you learn about, you know, the legacy and the story and the history, and it's experiential and all of that. But also you're on this campus where there's a, you know, music academy, and there's a, you know, really amazing college preparatory school, and all of the work that happens at the museum is feeding into those two parts of the organization. And so it feels like there's a different purpose. It's truly the music living on within our community in that way, which is really special. But yeah, it's a fun place to be. And I loved, you know, every day going in and, you know, figuring out a new record to listen to, or, you know, just really getting into the customer's needs and wants, which are definitely like, this was a, people who traveled to go to Stax are like, fun, you know, and the person that grew up listening to funk and soul music that was recorded on Macklemore Avenue, man, I tell you, they are the funnest people in the world. That's for sure. But I forgot what your question was. What were you asking me, Mark?
Well, that you continued to get to work with all these folks, the various studios.
Oh, yes. And Memphis Tourism, yeah, absolutely, yeah. So the programming, that's where I was going, yeah. So the programming there is really excellent. Being able to promote all of the amazing programming that happens in addition to the museum is really great. It's a place that I would go to before I worked at Memphis Tourism, just on a Friday night for a book signing or something else. You know, they did a Booker T. Jones event there for a book signing, I think it was late last year. And they have these conversations and, you know, moderated speakers come in and talk about issues within our community that are also relevant in the music that was being created in 1968, previous and after, of course, as well. Being able to have these conversations within the music and civil rights movement in our city today is something that we, I think, sometimes take for granted as like, let's talk about these issues as if, you know, as sort of a reflection. And that is not the way that we need to be talking about them. And it's also not the way that Stax approaches them, which I think is where I'm going with this is, you know, talking about music and civil rights and how those two things go together today, currently in 1968 and 1982, you know, all of that is super important and relevant and something that is really important to me. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's why I think it'll always be a special place to me, is they still do so much really good work there.
So we're moving into the last couple of weeks of May. What is next on the horizon for Memphis Tourism, the music hub? I mean, do you all get to go back into the offices pretty soon? What's it all looking like right now?
So we are currently planning to go back to the office at some point in the future, but there is not a date. Everybody's doing a really excellent job kind of grinding from home, and it shows. And as far as Music Hub goes and what's next on the horizon for us is, you know, we are continuing to work, specifically Music Hub and PR are working really closely together right now to make sure that we are visible in the journalism and media of the travel world. And that looks like, you know, big things, small things. That looks like a all current 2020 Memphis music playlist. It looks like a, you know, here are the ways that Memphis music is going live, you know, on listicle, you know, any way that we can let music and travel journalists know that we are still here and doing a good job of letting people kind of experience us from home right now until they can hop in their car and get here. Any way that we can do that, we're doing it. And so that's really what we're focusing on at the moment.
Almost forgot to mention the 2020 playlist. How did that come about?
Man, so honestly, that came about, I think, in the way that we were sending out, compiling a list of ways that you can experience Memphis in a virtual way. Might have been an I Love Memphis article, I'm not exactly sure, but I make Spotify playlists for our Memphis Tourism channel all the time. And sometimes that's, you know, the Jam in the Van live session. Sometimes it's the Memphis in May lineup, you know, whatever it is. And we have, of course, all the legacy lists. And I was just sitting around and like, man, I'm seeing every day these artists like putting out these new records or these new singles or whatever. And like, they're not just like sleepers either. This is like hip, young, talented members of our music community that are either, you know, releasing stuff that they've been sitting on, or they're getting in their house and figuring out a way to record it on the fly and just do something creative. And I was like, man, I could make a whole list of things that just came out in the past 4 months, and it's good and it makes you feel good. And so I did, and it's awesome. And I highly recommend it. It's really great.
And it's on Spotify, right?
It is on Spotify. So all of the playlists are on Memphis Music Hub. But you can also just go directly to Spotify and find the Memphis Travel Spotify. But you could also link to it here, Mark. I would love it if you did that, because I feel like, you know, some of your listeners will be very happy to hear all the fun music that's happening here currently in town.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, this has been a fun conversation. I mean, I honestly feel like I get to live a little vicariously through you and your experiences at Sun and Stacks, because, you know, I grew up in California listening to Elvis Sun Sessions, having no idea what Sun Sessions meant, and then coming here, have been on the tour a few times now, and so it's been a lot of fun talking to you and kind of living vicariously through you.
Mark, it's fun talking to you as well.
Jane Ellen White, thank you so much for joining us on Storyboard 30. Again, listeners, please go to the Memphis Tourism site, Memphis Music Hub. It's very easy to find. If you just key in on your keyboard, you go to Memphis Travel, right? MemphisTravel.com, and you can find the Music Hub and information there, and of course everything else that's on the tourism site. So Jane Ellen White, thank you once again.
Thanks, Mark.
You've been listening to Storyboard 30, and this is your host, Mark Fleischer. Thanks again to WIPL and the Memphis Public Libraries for their support, to producer Vance Durbin, and to WIPL broadcast manager Tommy Warren, and to you listeners and supporters of the library and FM 89.3. We hope you join us next time on Storyboard 30 for more conversation with those Memphis personalities and shapers who make our lives here in the Bluff City just a little bit better. Memphis, make it a great week and stay safe out there.